Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to introduce Jason Reichel, the co-founder of Go Nimbly, whose mission is to eliminate operational silos within go-to-market SaaS teams and how the sales communication process greatly impacts revenue. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, tell us a little bit more about Go Nimbly.
Sure. So Go Nimbly is the revenue operations company. Our job is to help SaaS and high growth companies really understand how to maximize the value of their customer. And we do this through a revenue operations methodology that we've created, which looks like consulting, coaching, and software that we've put into the marketplace in order to help operators maximize on the customer. And I'm happy to walk through how that all works as we move forward. We've worked with some of the biggest names in SaaS like Zendesk and Twilio, Coursera. A lot of the unicorn companies have used us for many, many years.
Very cool. Can you help frame the conversation a little bit, what it is that we're going to talk about today?
Sure. So we're going to talk about how revenue operations, specifically at early stage companies, can really make a difference between the growth and scalable business that you want to run and not having it. So, you know, a little bit about my background before we get started. I worked in consulting for a number of years in the Salesforce ecosystem. And then I was a VP of product at a couple big SaaS companies, the biggest of which was Tradeshift, which was a unicorn company. And I helped launch them to a $1 billion valuation. And through that process, I learned that a lot of great SaaS companies have a great product, but their revenue teams are not really operating the way that they should be operating and are not maximizing on that product. And that really comes down to a couple key facts that we'll go through today in the beginning part of this, which I've built a little presentation to sort of set the stage of why this is so important.
Sounds good. Well, awesome. Take it away.
Cool. The first thing I always like to start with whenever we're talking about RevOps is the story of RevOps and how it came to be, because I think this really sets the stage. So I don't know if you remember in the early 2000s, you would go to a conference and everyone would say, we're in the age of the informed customer. It was like this bullshit line that people would use to mean that people would read a website before they'd contact a sales rep. That is gone. So any organization that is still talking about your customers that way are sort of left in the stone age. We are really in the age of what I call the personalized customer experience. This is very, very clear in B2C products. If you go on Instagram, they've segmented you. You're getting ads that are tailored to your behaviors, so on and so forth. Not so common in the B2B space. And so GoNimbly operates most in the B2B space. But what we like to think we're doing is trying to bring those B2B customers into the age of B2C, into the age of personalized customer experience. And that's been happening for a long time in B2B. And so I kind of like just to go through this timeline real quick. So in 1866, the Yellow Pages were created. It was really the first time that B2B became a thing because you could actually look up businesses and call them. And then it took till 1936 for Dale Carnegie, who everyone knows, to publish his book, Win Friends and Influence People, is published. Huge book, all about B2B sales, all about relationship building, very real. And then it wasn't until 1990 that ACT, which was the first CRM, kind of hit the shelf and it became the customer management solution for people who lived in their email, and it paved the way to things like Salesforce.com. And then in 1999, Dun & Bradstreet was purchased for IPO and Hoover's became a data company, so that they made the transition from Dun & Bradstreet to Hoover's. And then what happened was a big thing, which was no longer did we just know that a business exists in Topeka, Kansas. We knew firmographic information about that business in Topeka. So from 1866 to 1999, the only thing you knew about a business was that it existed. And maybe you knew a couple people that, you know, existed in that space. And then in 1999, you started to know things like their revenue and the technologies they use and all of the segmentation data that really did make a big difference in selling to them because you could tailor your message to them. But at this point in time, we're still really focused on I'm the sales rep, I'm the sales team, and I'm reaching out and I have this secret information about this business, but it's really not about the key person, which is the individual. We had the relationships that we try to build, but these are all segmentation data about the company. And then in 2008, really started the rise of what we consider the personalized revolution. And that's because marketing automation tools allowed us to start assigning attribution levels to individuals hitting our websites, going through things. And that was only in 2008. And 2013, things like predictive analytics started to show up. And so you started getting buyer intent, and things became more about the buyer than about the business. The business was just secondary information. And in 2019, you basically have the ability, and this is when GoNimbly sort of stepped into the scene, to use all that information to deliver a very personalized buying experience that's contextually relevant to the business, but more importantly, it's talking to the buyer themselves. And by doing that, we've seen with our customers that we can increase the LTV of each of their customers by about 26%. So this is not with sales reps, more sales reps, or more marketing reps. This is by operationalizing this buying experience and really using all of this information to our advantage. And so that's where we've really been focusing our time as operators. It's no longer sales operations or marketing operations. It's just one unit, which we call revenue operations, which we'll go into in just a minute. But that's really the reason that this started. So why is this a problem in the first place? And it comes down to this thing, which you mentioned in the beginning of the intro, which is called silo syndrome. And unfortunately for tech companies of all sizes, especially ones that want to grow and become wildly successful, silo syndrome is something you're going to face. So, you know, I've been at many startups. GoNimbly was a startup at one point, and I have these kind of memories of when we were much younger and was like, everyone's wearing every hat and that was great and everybody is doing everything. And now everyone's in these specialized roles and like, I can't get things moving as fast. And what it really came down to was that we were experiencing silo syndrome. And this is true with any growing business, but the four culprits of silo syndrome are number of employee change. So the percent of change of employees you have year over year. SaaS companies are terrible at this because you have huge growth numbers, especially if you took investment. And so you may go from 10 employees to 50 employees to 100 employees. So it's very natural that they're going to start to silo because you're growing so rapidly. You're basically creating cohorts within your own business, which is a crazy thing that only technology companies kind of have to deal with. The number of organizational units change. You know, you go from having people wear multiple hats to being like, you are the head of analytics, right? You are the head of marketing. You are the head of this. When it used to be everybody would come in a room and work on it. Everyone becomes specialized. You start hiring crazy roles like Salesforce administrator roles for your organization operationally. And then essentially you begin to develop all these different incentive mechanisms. And this creates silos within every organization. And this is not something new. And it's not something that's really just tied to tech. And just to give you a little background so that you know that we're not making all this up, it actually comes from this guy named Phil, who worked at the Goodyear Tire Company. And his job was to go around in the 80s and try to unite all the Goodyear tires. Unique to Goodyear Tires is they actually owned all of their shops, but when they deployed new shops into a region, they let those shops run independently. And after a certain amount of time, they realized those shops were not taking advantage of the fact that they had a corporate structure whatsoever and were really not hitting the margins they should. So Phil went and tried to bring all of these companies together. And what he found is that they were so resistant to it because they were protecting their own silos. And so while he was driving through Iowa or something like that, he saw a silo grain. He coined the term silo syndrome. And he spent the rest of his career, he quit Goodyear Tires and became basically a consultant trying to solve this problem and died 2 years ago and kind of concluded at the end of it that we were in the age of being able to solve this problem because technology allows us to solve this problem in a way that it couldn't before. So that's where GoNimbly's kind of stepped in and taken on this mantle and tried to solve this problem. If all of that was too much for you, this is what you should know, which is when you have silos, you become less creative, you become less competitive, you become less successful, and ultimately you leak revenue. And so that's why it's totally important for all organizations to understand the silos they're creating. And this starts when you're 10 people in a room, all the way up to when you're 1,000 people at a large SaaS company. So this is a message that is true for everyone. So I want to pause there. Is there any questions that you have, Natalie?
Yes. So basically a silo is like a department, right?
A silo is a department that cares more about protecting themselves than working on the behalf of the customer or the business. So the way that I look at all businesses is it breaks down into two flywheels. And this is in a book I'm writing called Transformed, which is you have the right side of the flywheel, which is your product team, your business operations, and they're really about growth or margin of your product. And then you have the left flywheel, which is your go-to-market team, which is all of your operators, your sales and marketing team, and your customer success team. And they're focused on increasing revenue for the business. And so GoNimbly focuses all of our energy on the go-to-market side of the business. And so when I'm talking about anything moving forward, I'm talking about the go-to-market side, which is traditionally the operators are customer success operators, marketing operators, sales operations, right? And so I like to think of those people as the directors of this scalable RevOps model. And then the actors are your sales, marketing, customer success team who are actually shaking the hands of the customers. And so when we're talking about those teams, yeah, every business is going to have those. And when you look at those departments, when you say, this is my marketing department, as a CEO, if you're saying, this is my marketing department, and this is the head of marketing, you are undoubtedly over time going to create silos, right? Maybe not right away, but over time you'll create silos because that team will go, we're marketing, our job is to deliver MQLs. Well, what if those MQLs don't convert to new revenue? Well, it doesn't matter. I've delivered MQLs, so I've justified my existence. That is not benefiting the business. And when you're at an early stage startup, people don't fall prey to this because it's all hands on deck. But when you get to a later stage, people fall prey to this pretty easily. So what I wanted to share with people today is a framework that we created, which is called the levels of RevOps intentionality. But Go Nimbly, we're basically finding the gaps the customers experience. The customers don't care about sales, marketing, customer success. They care about the experience of buying your product. And every time they find a gap in your process, what they do is they spend less money or you lose political trust with them, which usually means they're not going to bring it across their org. They're not going to sign a long contract. All of these things that hurt LTV of the customer. And so what we do is we actually look for those gaps and we prioritize our operational work based on the customer. Now, what's cool about this is it does align to the experience we have. It does align to our intuition, but it starts with what the customer's experiencing first. And when you do that, you can fill in big gaps to customer's experience at scale. And that means that it's not a one-off thing. It's a thing that actually improves the entire buying experience for every single customer that goes through that channel. There's 50% of operations that is reactive and proactive. What we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about how to find gaps that you can close that are going to be scalable. And we have invented a model that anyone can use called 3VC. And it stands for volume, value, velocity, and conversion. So anybody that has HubSpot, Salesforce, any kind of CRM, it doesn't actually matter. You will be able to get these things from your opportunity pipeline data. And what you do is you place these over a period of time and you look for performance against yourself. And I'll give you some real world examples here in just a second so that it's a little bit more clear. Let me just scroll down here. So volume is the volume of opportunities going through the pipeline. Value is the dollar amount. Velocity is how fast they're moving, and conversion is your conversion. So if I was going to put this in a snapshot, it might look like this. So here's all my stages of my deals. Here's the volume. Here's the value. Here's the velocity. And here's the conversion, right? So this is just a data table. What it looks like as a hot grid is like this, right? So you can see all of this stuff across the board. So right now I'm looking at the single level called conversion. And I can see this organization has a problem moving from discovery to technical acceptance. Now, this is unique to them, but it doesn't matter. You can imagine this is stage 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever your stages are, you can build this in your CRM pretty easily as an operator. And what you just need to do is put this over time. So GoNimbly does two things. We always measure our customers against themselves for the last 6 months. And so that's how we get how well you're doing. And then we measure you against all of the customers in the industry of SaaS that GoNimbly has. That's something that listeners, you know, you're not going to be able to do, but something that we do with our own software. But you can still run this for yourself. So as an example, at this point in time in discovery, we found that they were having an issue, right? And so what we were able to do is we thought of operational projects that would target this area and potentially move it up. And you can see by December of 2018, it was at 25.7%. Onto the next stage. And so what the issue was here was that they had hired a bunch of BDRs who were not good at discovery calls. And so the customers were not seeing the need to move forward, right? Here they were having AEs do the discovery calls and the AEs felt that it was pretty cumbersome for them. And then they hired a bunch of BDRs to do the discovery calls and they didn't do adequate training. And so the customers didn't feel the need to move forward. So in these two period months, we did enablement, which is part of the RevOps skill set. We did a bunch of enablement to the BDRs to teach them how to run proper discovery calls. And this has gone up and up and up, which ultimately, if we go further into 2019 and 2020, this is now around 40%. And they have a conversion rate, a total conversion rate of about 4% now, right? But you can also see other areas here. So as an example, they were also having an issue, and I'll show you that here, as those reps were basically handling, those AEs were handling the discovery calls, they were not able to make the business cases as much. So we started to see a drop in conversion later on in the funnel. And so we made the decision to move the AEs out of that discovery phase, train the new BDRs, and then overall we have better numbers moving forward. So this is what a revenue operator does. The art of revenue operations is the same as what your sales operations team or marketing operations team does now, but it's based solely on what the customers are experiencing and gaps they're finding in your pipeline. So you would have one of these for every one of your major buying experiences. So if you had a velocity-based business and then you had an enterprise sales track, those would be two different 3VC pipelines you would be looking at. Very common though, people ask, well, how do you find marketing automation gaps? Well, if you look up here, stage zero, which is the sales first meeting, anytime in the very front of your funnel there are issues, it's typically a marketing automation issue. Something around MQL, something around scoring, something like that. And we just know that from experience. Most operators know that too. And then at Go Nimbly, we spend a lot of time not thinking of ourselves as sales ops, marketing ops, or customer success. Rather, we think of ourselves as holistic operators that are going to solve the problems, they're going to push the customer towards closing bigger deals with us.
Very, so, very cool. I do have a question here. So the stages that you currently have, in order for you to be able to plug in this data that, you know, SaaS companies have, they need to have proper data, right? So what are some steps that you identify are applicable to every SaaS company? And what are some numbers that they need to track properly in order for, you know, you or themselves later check whether they are on track or not?
So what's the coolest thing about 3VC as a practice is that you don't have to have good data to measure against yourself as long as you have a consistent data pattern, right? So if you have shitty data and your team is bad at putting information in, you're still going to be able to find the gaps because you're still going to see them in this model. If you want to compare yourself to others like SaaS organizations like GoNimbly does, we actually take people's data and we clean it up and we put a meta layer over it. What we suggest is the proper stages is a 5-stage process, right? Which is intro, discovery, demo, proposal, and close won or close lost. Most SaaS companies don't need anything more than that. And usually what they're doing is they're basically using stages as descriptors to not have a conversation about the deal. And we believe that's kind of the wrong thing to do in general. So we tend to push people towards a 5-step process, but those are the 5 stages that we think are really, really necessary as a 5-step process. You don't really need to name them. They just need to be clear to what's happening. And behind the scenes, map everybody's stage to one of those 5 stages. And that's how we get aggregate data for our customers. But like in this example, this customer has 6 stages, right? So, you know, that's kind of all I've put together for the presentation. I just wanted to show kind of what RevOps is in SaaS. And RevOps is really just taking data, using it, and then finding the biggest bang for your buck. There's another part of this whole process, which is, and a lot of these ideas come from my background in product, is now we would take those operational projects that we're talking about doing, and we put them on a roadmap and share them with the entire sales, marketing, customer success team, because the operators and RevOps work for, they're like another department. They don't work for anyone. They don't report to the head of sales. They don't report to the head of marketing. They don't report to the head of CS. They're partners of those teams. And so it's a real yin yang situation. So I consider, you know, all the sales and marketing to be what I call the go-to-market team, the RevOps team, and together we make the revenue team. And I find that to be a really good model, and either we report directly to the CRO or we report to the CEO. And that typically is the best bang for your buck.
I love the framework. I'm all for improving conversion and basically what you have in your black box, right, in your process. After someone enters your funnel, instead of getting more and more people top of funnel, you're basically working to optimize what you already have.
That's correct.
How you can very inexpensively, compared to you spending all the money, additional marketing budget to get more people top of funnel, to actually increase and improve your revenue and grow your MRR.
I think RevOps is critical to bootstrap businesses because what it allows you to do is people say, well, you know, you do need front end of the customers. And this process, just to be clear, we take it all the way from lead to the end behind the scenes. So we look at the entire customer journey in a similar way. We create statuses that go all the way across. Salesforce doesn't really allow you to do that, right? It's something that we have to build on our own software to really manage that. But you can go pretty far just looking at your sales data. But 100% of the customers who buy from you they won, right? You won them. And so if you could get 26% more revenue out of each of those customers who said yes, how would that actually change your numbers? And if I flip this mechanism to value, you would see, even though someone who might be astute go, hey, Jason, you're saying when this was a problem that a 1.3% conversion rate, that's true. But this 1.1% conversion rate over here was about $75,000 more in December of 2018 than it was in July of 2018, because we were converting and pushing the right kind of customers through, right? So again, that's why if I come back to here, and I just want to go over this again, we actually look at that same grid for volume, value, velocity, and conversion. And so we find operational projects across all of these different things. As an example, if you want to go upstream and your value is low, we'll think of operational projects, which are usually marketing-based projects, which will help increase the value of each of the customers that you have in your pipeline.
Very, very cool. What are some low-hanging fruits that you usually see working with SaaS companies?
So ultimately, when we are working with SaaS companies, first place that you can find gaps as an operator, and everyone knows this, and they call it misalignment, I hate that term, is in any of the handoff processes, BDR to AE, AE to implementation team, marketing throughout the whole process, right? But in each of those friction points, whenever you talk about misalignment, you're talking about the internal innards of the team. We don't allow ourselves to talk that way because the customer doesn't experience it that way, right? You should be able to eat hot dogs without knowing how hot dogs are made. And every time the customer can feel one of those handoffs, it really does feel like a jarring experience to them. We've done so many interviews, and we're about to release a big study with HubSpot and RevOps Squared around what customers experience when they're in your buying experience, and they can see your innards. You forget that most of your customers are also businesses themselves who probably are in the tech space or have some B2B selling experience, and they can see your insert blank name here template not working, right? And that really does erode trust, or they're in the middle of a sales cycle and they're getting some cold email from some BDR someplace. And so those kind of dysfunctions exist because those silos are protecting themselves. If you go to a BDR and you say, you sent this email to Jason and I'm trying to engage with him in a sales cycle, he's going to go, I'm sorry, he was in my list. I'm trying to hit my activity goals. And you're going to be pissed off as head of sales, but he's right. He's trying to hit his activity goals, right? And you're all working out of the same database. People love to blame bad data on this, but really it's bad communication between teams. It's bad holistic plays. And so I'm a big proponent of orchestrating plays across the board. And, you know, bringing in technologies and processes that require integration. So the two primary plays that I bring into organizations that are really RevOps plays, in my opinion, are ABM structure. So ABM requires everyone to play on the field at the same time, and conversational marketing tools like Drift or tools like that, where are you a marketer or are you a sales rep when you're answering someone on your website? Who fucking knows, right? It's just the reality of what you are. And so I love tools like that kind of force us into this new paradigm of being wherever our customer is and trying to speed up the velocity of that deal.
How can founders listening to this identify the low-hanging fruits for themselves? And then second part of that question is start working towards improving those issues.
Yeah. I go to dinners with CEOs, and I run this little like thing called the ROI, which is the Revenue Influencers Community here in San Francisco. And I say, what's your operations team doing? CEOs have no idea. So that's the first problem, which is what is your operations team doing? Because most of them view their operations team as a cost center. That is, or they are a support center for making things work. That is the wrong attitude to have. So if I was talking to a CEO, I'd say, look, the last untapped money-making resource you have two actually. You have operations of your go-to-market team and you have customer success. Those are the last two areas of your business that have not been tapped to maximize revenue. If we look at marketers, you know, 10 years ago, marketing was a joke, which is I keep spending money on marketing because I don't know which part of my budget drives something, right? Now we have marketing attribution, and now marketers control the biggest budgets in the entire industry because they can show what they do has value. I think the operator is on the next cusp of that. I think the operator can show now, hey, we didn't increase anything but change our operational processes. And because of that, we've increased our revenue. And there's not another department that if you put a dollar in, you get a dollar 26 out. That's just totally unique to what we're doing in operations. And so when I start to talk to them about that, they start to be very interested. And the best thing you can do is go to your team, go, what are you working on? And what is that going to do to our revenue? If you ask that question, you'll realize if you have a team focused on revenue impact or if you have a team focused on supporting your sales and marketing team. And if you have a team supporting your sales and marketing team, you are not going to grow revenue the way that you could be growing revenue. So stop everything and say, I need to know the revenue impact, not the ROI, not the savings to my team. I don't care if it's hard to be a BDR. What I want to know is what you're doing, is it going to actually impact revenue or not? And that simple, simple thing to put into place in every conversation will change how your go-to-market team works. It's really stupid simple. It's we just accept that operations is a support class to our business. And that is not true. The softwares we buy are evolving all the time, and you will not need to administer them as much as you've had to in the past. That's just a reality of the tool set, or they're not as difficult. So if you hire a Salesforce admin, yeah, there's Salesforce admin work to do, but there's a lot more sales operations work that can be done in order to impact revenue than page layouts. That has nothing to do with impacting revenue. Data management has nothing to do with impacting revenue. Eventually, you'll get to a place where bad data does impact revenue, and that will be obvious to everyone, right? A good example is if you're trying to call people because you have a call process you have to follow and you can't reach anyone. That's obviously impacting revenue, right? And so going and doing a data cleanup project on that particular field is important. Now, what will happen with most operations, they'll go, well, we're in here, let's fix all this other stuff. And then you have a 6-month project and you've only fixed one thing that actually impacts revenue. I'm a very big proponent that problems in the SaaS space emerge when they need to emerge. So all you have to be doing is saying, what are we doing? It's more important what you're saying no to than what you're saying yes to, and keep your team highly focused on revenue impact.
In your example, you've shared that the numbers that I've seen is, I think the very bottom line was 1%. So 1% on average, if talking about benchmarks, would that be approximately a good benchmark number for us and SaaS founders to be our goal? Did I get it right, from visitor all the way to sale? So it is 1% conversion rate?
I think with revenue operations, you can get to about 3 or 4%. Standard operations is about 1%. So you can see that organization as they implemented RevOps. And if I zoomed out and showed you their 2019 numbers, they got to about 2.5 to 2.7% by the end of 2019. So we can convert about 4% of our visitors to sales at this point using the RevOps methodologies for most velocity-based businesses. Now, if you're talking about enterprise businesses, it might stay around 1%, but you'll see an increase of about 10 to 15% of value. So you'll see bigger deals closing.
That is very, very cool, because on average, SaaS companies' websites convert at around 3 to 5% from visitor to a demo or a trial.
Correct.
We're talking about conversion from visitor to a sale.
Correct.
Which is absolutely awesome.
And I think it's really about building the entire process around the customer, right? Because if you interview anyone, and again, this is part of the research, and we went to, you know, talk to buyers of Zendesk and said, when did you know that you wanted to buy Zendesk? They said, oh, before I ever went to their website. Okay, cool. Well, obviously Zendesk is a big brand and they're kind of known in the space. That might not be true for some of our smaller startups that are out there, but your customer knows pretty quick if they're going to buy your software, and all they're looking for are the reasons not to buy your software, right? And so then the experience that you give them is the only differentiator between you and X. At this point, we have to admit it, innovation is not the key to SaaS anymore, because it's so easy to rip off features. Even if we think internally at a company, oh, our features are so unique, they don't operate like X, but X markets the same way. The customer doesn't really know that until much, much later, and probably never, right? Because they're going to go with a piece of software and that's the way segmentation is going to work for them. And they don't know that you have a better segmentation engine. And in reality, they don't actually give a shit. And so you have to really learn from the very beginning that the customer, every customer that hits your website, especially if you're B2B, they're there to buy, right? And if your website and your experiences don't do that, then you are going to fail. And I actually believe there are a couple other milestones, which is, like, example for GoNimbly's website. If you land on our website, we are not going to try to sell you anything, because we know we're in a new space. We are educating you on revenue operations, because the people who hit our website are people who can't afford our services. Our services start around $24K a month. It's a subscription-based experience. So people are paying us an ad firm to be their operational team, right? And to work with their teams and coach them and move them through the process. But because I do so many podcasts like this and things like that, we have a lot of smaller organizations hitting our website that we want to put them on a track, an experiential track. So our win is that they've downloaded X things and they've done Y, and that if they grow to the point of needing us, they will think of us first, right? And so it really matters about what your win is. Not all wins for all SaaS companies are exactly a closed one money generating deal, especially for platform companies. You know, like when we worked with Twilio, they had Uber spending $1 million a month before they ever talked to them, right? And that was a real thing where, you know, in that organizational thing, people with self-service on a portal could sign up, start using the platform, start generating income for Twilio, and then eventually become a customer of, you know, their enterprise cycle. So not all SaaS companies are created the same, but I will say that customers that are hitting your website, they want to use your product. It's only if you make it difficult. So if I am a big believer that if you can do velocity-based sales and give people the software, give them the software, let them use it. I do think that you need to follow up with them. I do think that you need to have unique buying experiences. A lot of organizations don't have that. You need to know the difference between small, medium-sized, and enterprise business and what that looks like and how you have to sell to them. Not how you have to sell to them to win, but how they would like to be sold to. So I think a lot more sales teams could benefit from having a user researcher work on behalf of the sales team. A lot of product teams have user researchers. I think you should point that user researcher and interview, especially if you're early stage, your customers, and find out how the buying experience was for them and how soon they knew your product was a right fit. Because as soon as you can find the customer who says, I landed on your website and I knew instantly I wanted to buy it, and it was only a conversation of how and why, that's the buying experience you want to scale, because you want more of that customer. That's how you get to that 1% to 4% of people actually hitting your website.
Very cool. So you've mentioned, when I asked you what are some low-hanging fruits that founders can do right away in their companies, the first answer you said that making sure that the entire team knows that the things that they're doing are impacting revenue and how it's impacting. Anything else that we can recommend founders do?
Create a roadmap, have your teams create a roadmap and put those items on that roadmap so that when those things go live, whatever they say they're doing, you can go back and reference them. Did it have the impact you said it would? And this can be a very informal process. It doesn't need to be numbers. I would say you need to do this across your team. You need to treat your go-to-market team like you do your product team. So this is to CEOs and founders who are product-centric. It works really, really well. It drives the team. So create a roadmap and then ultimately start as soon as possible interviewing the customers who are winning, who you are winning, and finding out when in the process did you win them and what was their experience like. And then keep working backwards until you can find that ideal customer who landed on your website, talked to someone, did whatever process that was, and knew from the very beginning they wanted to buy your product. It was just a question of how much can I afford, or is this the right, can I like sell this to my, you know, my own team internally, right? Because as soon as you can get there, then you can work backwards and you can build your entire website around that. You can build your entire buying experience around that. So that's to me what a CRO is really supposed to do. A lot of CROs are just glorified sales reps, and that is not what I think a CRO is. A CRO is an operator who believes in marketing, sales, and customer success as a unified thing to move the customer to buy and upsell and resell and continue to grow within your organization. And a good CRO knows that and has their finger on it. Yes, they're using marketing to build journeys. Yes, they're using the sales team to create urgency. Yes, they're using the operators to scale those processes. But ultimately, they work on behalf of the customer.
Very cool. Any other recommendations? Anything else that I haven't asked you but should have?
How hard is this? I think that's a valid question. So it's not hard if you take it in steps, right? So to get to the place I showed you of you have that grid and you're using data and you're moving away from art form and moving into more of a customer gap mindset, that will take some time in your organization. Those frameworks exist. Go to gonimbly.com, our blog. We have all that information on how to build that in Salesforce. I would say though, asking your team to give you a revenue impact statement for everything they want to do that's more than 1 week's worth of time is not that hard and the lowest hanging fruit you can do that will have the most impact to your business. And it will clarify to them what they need to do in order to hit that. And I think that's a big thing. The other thing I would tell founders of early stage companies is you need to be the RevOps person, right? Meaning a RevOps person doesn't get excited about the big deal. They also don't get excited about the small deal that's an outlier. They look at what the middle points are and they try to expand this way and that way. right? So they try to go down market and up market at the same time, and they're focused on the repeatable pop process. And if you have a founder or a CEO who can do that, that business will grow so much more steadily and like kind of blow all the numbers out of the park. I'm assuming you have good product, right? But ultimately, I think that's kind of my advice is there is no reason not to start at least the conversation of revenue operations with the revenue impact statement. Maybe you don't unify all your teams. Maybe you don't have a team. I don't know the size of your organization, but you can start having the mindset right now. And I guarantee you what's going to happen is you're going to put yourself in the best position to raise money or continue to be bootstrapped if that's what you want to do.
Got it. Tell us where our listeners can find you, learn more about you, about your company, and who is your ideal customer that you are bringing most results?
Sure. Our ideal customer is usually Series C to IPO, so usually pretty large enterprise B2B companies. So if you are one of those companies and you're listening and you want to talk about becoming a customer, that's great. If you're not and you just want information on revenue operations and you want to share it in the thought space, go to our website, gonimbly.com. We have a blog that's built just for you around all the fundamentals of revenue operations. We also have a coaching platform. So for very little money, if you're a small company, I think $5,000 to $10,000 a month, you can get a revenue operations consultant to coach your team on how to become a RevOps team. And you'll see dividends pay on that. We've seen very many small organizations take advantage of that and grow. But me personally, you know, and I like to do this, I'm going to give everyone here my phone number. You can text me. I'm happy to answer your questions directly. This is something I really believe in. I believe revenue operations is like going from manufacturing traditionally to lean manufacturing, or going from waterfall development to agile. It's a thing that your business must do if you want to stay competitive, especially after COVID. I think the businesses who implement this now are going to thrive in the new normal. And I hate using COVID as a reason to do this, but you know, we're seeing the businesses that come to us now are Coca-Cola and big organizations who really want to take advantage of this, right? And so the smaller organizations are primed to really take advantage. So you can message me. My number is 415-669-0546. I try to answer that as often as I can. I get a lot of text messages from people asking questions, but I'm happy to help businesses. It's something I really believe in. And you can always follow me on LinkedIn at BetterJason.
Awesome. Any last parting words?
Have fun. You know, nothing we're doing is rocket science. It's about experimenting and about running a healthy business. And there's nothing better than feeling like you're doing something innovative and everyone is happier because of it.
You mentioned that you're writing a book. Any other books that you would recommend that, you know, inspired you, for example?
Yeah. So I have a book right here. So this is a series by Ari Winswig. I don't know if I said that right. It's called A Lapsed Anarchist Approach to Business. And it's four books. Very big. I'm a design thinker. That's what I studied. And ultimately it talks about the anatomy of a business and how to grow a business with culture and beliefs and managing people's selves. It's a lot of the stuff I talk about around intentionality, which is what I talk a lot about on LinkedIn. I really speak a lot to organizations. I've done speaking engagements at Stanford around what business will look like 20 or 30 years from now. And a lot of those ideas come directly from these books. So it's called A Lapsed Anarchist Approach to Business. It's a very good read.
Thank you so much, Jason. This has been fun.